Hi, this is Mallory Nye, and welcome to the History Zinc podcast series. Or welcome back if you've been listening to the earlier episode. In this episode, HIP006, I'll be continuing where I left off from the previous one, which was HIP5, on a broad and sweeping discussion of interactions in the engagements between Europe and the Muslim world, and in particular, the evolution and creation of the idea of Europe as a Christian land with Islam and Muslims on its edges. In the last episode, I spoke particularly about the Hispanic Peninsula, that is, Spain and Portugal, and the long centuries of Muslim rule as Andalusia. In this episode, we'll be looking further east, at the significance of Byzantium and the fall of Constantinople to the Ottoman Turks in the 15th century. For centuries, therefore, the western border between such Christian countries and the Muslim political entity of the Caliphate was somewhere within the Hispanic Peninsula. Over the centuries, groups who identified themselves as native and Christian fought against the Muslim rule, establishing small kingdoms in a movement that came to be known as the Reconquista, the Reconquest. The last part of this happened in 1492, as I mentioned in an earlier episode, nearly 800 years after the first Umayyad army established itself in the region. Although the Caliphate remained in power across the Straits of Gibraltar, apart from in the fortress port of Ceuta, which was taken by the Portuguese in 1415, the Muslim state of Al-Andalusia disappeared from the Hispanic Peninsula, and thus Spain and Portugal came to be included in the emerging concept of Europe. Across to the east, the region of Anatolia, what is now Turkey, and then later the areas to the north of Greece, broadly called the Balkans, were the areas that, like the Hispanic Peninsula and the northwest African coast of the Mediterranean, saw fluctuations in the concept of what was included and excluded from the boundaries of Europe. Indeed, this history has important significance today, as we will see in much of the discussion to come in this podcast series. The question of whether the modern state of Turkey is or could be a part of Europe is an ongoing debate, with an application by the nation to become a member of the European Union still outstanding and scheduled for further consideration over the next decade. Turkey stands out here for different reasons, partly because it lies outside of the traditional geography of Europe, which has been marked by the waterways of the Dardanelles and the Bosphorus, the narrow straits that connect the Mediterranean to the Black Sea. Thus, geographically, Europe is viewed as all the lands north of the Mediterranean and west of the Black Sea. However, such a geography is itself the product of the social and political history of the region, which is tied to the issue of the borders between Muslim and Christian political entities. Anatolia was, as we have seen, for centuries a part of the Greek world. Indeed, it was the centre of the Greek Byzantine world for more than 1,000 years. It is with considerable irony that the person who perhaps defined most clearly the continents of Europe, Asia, and Africa, the 5th century BCE Greek historian Herodotus, was himself from Anatolia, from the city that is now Bodrum in Turkey. In fact, the Arab Muslims of both the Umayyad and Abbasid Caliphates tried, on and off, to expand their territory through Anatolia to capture Constantinople. They failed to achieve the latter, although they kept up their conflicts with the Byzantines of Anatolia for centuries. Indeed, it has been argued by some recent scholars that the largely ongoing war between the Byzantine Christians and the Arab Muslims had an impact on the wider politics of the region or the continent. In particular, whereas previously the Byzantines had exerted influence and power within Western Europe, they eventually found during the 8th century that they could no longer afford to do so, as their resources were taken up with keeping the Arab Muslim Umayyads and then the Abbasids at bay. Of course, they had already lost the areas of North Africa, which, as I've mentioned already, was where much of their grain came from. In short, even though the Byzantines continued for many centuries to retain the Roman Empire in the east, and the continuation of particularly Greek influence in that region, the standoffs they faced with the Arab Empire on their eastern border from the late 7th century onwards led to the decline of the Byzantines' influence in the west of Europe. One particular outcome of this change was the rise of a group who had previously been seen as barbaric and beyond civilization. That is, the Franks, who, as we saw in the last episode, were establishing their dominance over the west of Europe, in conflict in particular with the Andalusian part of the wide-ranging Arab-Muslim Empire. Or to put this another way, Byzantine's declining influence in the west of Europe made an important contribution to the rise of the Franks and the establishment of the dynasty of Charlemagne and the creation of the Holy Roman Empire. It was this polity that eventually took over the mantle of the Roman legacy from the Byzantines, and it was as a consequence of the changing borders of the continent. For the sake of brevity in these introductory episodes, I won't say very much here about the Crusades, of the many different interventions made in the name of Christianity by Western and Central European Christian powers in the Holy Land of the Levant from the late 11th to the 15th centuries. The initial impetus for these large-scale campaigns came originally from a request made by the Byzantines for assistance, but they were also motivated by the somewhat late realization and politicization of the well-established Muslim political control of Jerusalem and its biblically charged environment. Indeed, by this time the threat to the Byzantines came from Seljuk Turkic Muslims rather than Arabs, who had risen to dominance in the region and during the 11th century took control of much of Anatolia and began to threaten Constantinople. In fact, these Turks didn't capture the ancient city for a few more centuries, which, during that time, largely saw a decline of the Byzantine Empire almost out of existence. Of course, the Crusades brought Catholic Christian powers in direct contact with the Eastern Mediterranean, initially in terms of invasion and conquest, and then through the ongoing development and finally the loss of colonies in Jerusalem and along the Levant coast, Tyre, Jaffa, Acre, Antioch, and so on. This not only created some of the first European colonies outside of Christendom, but it also opened up some new forms of trade between the Levant coast and northern Egypt and Western kingdoms such as France and the Italian states. This in itself gave rise to the development of merchant states such as Venice and Genoa, which achieved considerable power through their trade with the other powers in the region of the Levant, even after the Crusader kingdoms in that region declined and disappeared. Indeed, right across the Mediterranean, the places where the southern and eastern Muslim powers collided with the northern and western Christian powers were often places of considerable advancement, both culturally and technologically. Andalusia is well known for its tolerance between the different religious groups, and was a safe home, for example, for Jewish communities that were otherwise shunned or persecuted across the Christian countries. Universities in Andalusia, such as in Toledo, were places where the ancient classical traditions of Greece and elsewhere were maintained and developed by Arabic-speaking Muslim thinkers. These places flourished as centres for engagement between the northern Christians and the southern Muslims, with much of the flow of knowledge and development from the south to the north. It was from Muslim thinkers such as Ibn Sina, known as Avicenna in the Christian world, and the Andalusian writer Ibn Rushd, known as Averroes, that the works of the classical Greeks were diffused into the Christian Catholic world, but not without controversy. Thus, in the formerly Abbasid context of Sicily, the Christian rulers in the 12th century sponsored Latin thinkers such as Michael Scott, who had previously studied in Arabic in Toledo. His name indicates that he was reputedly originally from Scotland, although he became a prominent scholar in Italy, Spain, and Sicily. He studied the teachings of the Spanish Muslim scholars, and through that study he translated the works of Aristotle from Arabic into Latin making the Greek philosopher's works available to the Latin Christian Church. This in itself had significant impact on Catholic Christianity, leading in part to heretical movements such as the Cathars, which I mentioned in a previous episode, and Aristotle was not officially sanctioned in the Catholic tradition until the emergence of the Dominican thinker Thomas Aquinas, who gradually became the centre of orthodoxy. After over 700 years of trying, Muslim powers eventually conquered Constantinople in 1453, when the Ottoman Turks successfully besieged and invaded the ancient city. It marked the end of the Byzantine Empire, which had been in place for over 1100 years, although the newly emerging Russian Empire at that time took on the title of the Third Rome, as the Russian Tsars or Caesars were themselves descended in part from the last Byzantine emperors. For the next 200 years, the Ottoman Turks were an active threat to the Western and Central European powers, as I've mentioned in previous episodes when talking about the Reformation. Ottoman armies reached as far as besieging Vienna, first in 1529 and then in 1683. Major cities were integrated into the Ottoman Empire, including Belgrade and Budapest, and the Muslim populations of many contemporary Eastern European countries were established during this time, including Bosnia, Albania, Bulgaria, Hungary, and others. Indeed, the classical European legend of the infamous 15th century Vlad the Impaler, a prince and warlord in the Kingdom of Wallachia, in what is now Romania, are rooted in this time of Christian versus Ottoman-Muslim conflict in the Balkan region. Vlad's family name, Dracula, is derived from the Christian order of the dragon, the Drago, a crusading-type knightly order that was formed to protect the Christian people of the region from the threats of Ottoman-Muslim conquest. Moving forward from this towards some of the later episodes of this History's Inc. podcast series, following the full conquest of the Iberian Peninsula by Christian powers at the end of the 15th century, which also, of course, saw the emergence of the New Worlds of the America with the voyages of Christopher Columbus and many others, and the emergence of Christian Spain and Portugal as entities in themselves as part of this idea of Europe, we need to bear in mind that both Muslims and Jews remained in the countries very much in secret, despite mass conversions and expulsions of these former groups. These crypto-Muslims and Jews lived largely underneath the surface of very overtly Catholic Spain, largely under fear of violent persecution, torture, and death. The Moriscos, the hidden Muslims, in fact led a revolt against King Philip in 1568. It's impossible to know the extent of the continuation of crypto-Muslim and Jewish identities in Spain and Portugal, nor indeed what impact this might have had as these countries then entered into their time of conquests across the globe. But of course, in conclusion to this long discussion, the time of expansion by the Western European nations, Spain and Portugal, Britain, France and Holland and others, also saw an expanding set of interactions with new Muslim societies across the globe. Many of the slaves shipped by the British and Spanish to the Americas, thus some of the first people of the New World, were in fact Muslims, albeit enslaved. As the Europeans sailed down the west coast of Africa and then up the east coast, they came across Muslims nearly everywhere they landed and settled. And then, of course, in India, where the Indian Mughal Muslim powers were in ascendancy across much of the subcontinent, and then through the lands of Southeast Asia, in the Straits of Malacca, Java, the Spice Islands, and Borneo, Islam and Muslims had preceded the arrival of European Christian explorers and colonialists. In many respects, the history of Europe and Europeans is a history of encounters with Islam, either in terms of conflicts or engagements. And throughout this long history, the basic issue of European identity, the idea of Europe and being European, has been thought through in terms of Islam on the periphery, as the other to the European self. In many respects, as we will explore in later episodes, we have come a long way through European history and are still where we have always been. So thanks very much for listening to these episodes 5 and 6. And in fact, if you've not yet listened to episode 6, that's HIP006, then just tune in now to catch up on the discussion that you've missed. And if you'd like any further information on this History's Inc. podcast series, then do have a look at my website, mallorynye.com/histories-inc, for a list of all the episodes. And you may also be interested in my other podcast, which can be found at mallorynye.com/podcasts, including my general podcast titled Mallory Nye, and another on the theme of studying religion, titled Religion Bites. These can all be found on my website, mallorynye.com, or otherwise on Stitcher, TuneIn, or on iTunes. Just search for my name, Mallory Nye. Thanks very much for listening, and I'll see you again in the next episode on Slavery, the Indelible Stain. Bye for now.